This is The Grad Perspective, where fresh voices in sports media and business take to the mic. We often hear from the veterans, the industry giants decades into their career, but what about those just breaking in? I'm your host, Kira Johnston, and each episode I sit down with a Holmes Glen graduate who is making their mark in the industry. If you are chasing a career in sport or just want to know what it really looks like, you're in the right place. Honest conversations, real experiences, stories that inspire the next wave.
Sam walked in and said, this is an opportunity that we have come across. And I think you say the story more than anything, but like my face lit up beyond anything. I basically found out when everybody in the world found out. Ross came out and he said this on Agenda Setters. He got a media guy and said, you need to come to the theatre room. Throw yourself into everything. Even if you think that you aren't going to be good at it, throw yourself in.
Today, I am joined by Jared Thomas, Content and Social Media Coordinator at St Kilda Football Club. Welcome.
Thank you. It's very, very good to be here. I'm glad to be back at Holmes Glen. This studio has had a serious makeover since we were studying here.
It has.
I don't think we had a TV. It definitely didn't have the lights. It's very, very good to be here, though. And yeah, glad you got the role right, because I don't even think I know my own role title.
So I had to look it up on LinkedIn, but we we got there. And I'm glad you could make some time for us in between all your NAS commitments. So glad to have you in the studio. Now, in the industry, we like to start with an elevator pitch. So tell me about yourself.
Yeah, well, obviously, you basically covered it. I'm the content and social media coordinator at St Kilda. I've been working there for the last 7 months or so, which has been very, very nice. And yeah, had a lot of different experience leading up to that, which has been very, very good working at some very, very cool places. Melbourne Victory, did a bit of ESPN Australia and all these kinds of things. And yeah, led me to work at St Kilda, which is the team I grew up supporting, a team that I very, very much love and adore. And yeah, very, very happy to be there now and having a blast. Yeah, first year in.
We will definitely get into your St Kilda role a little later on in the episode, but can you take me back to where your passion for sport or maybe media began? When did you decide this is the role you wanted to have?
Yeah, I like to say that I'm pretty lucky in that.
You build your own luck. That's my saying on this podcast. Luck doesn't exist. You make it.
Well, yeah, I suppose that is true. But I would say that I'm lucky in the fact that I know a lot of people in the world don't exactly know what they want to do for a while. It sort of takes until, you know, their mid-20s or after they finish school to sort of get a grasp on what they want to do. I like to consider myself lucky in that I knew what I wanted to do from like 12. Like I would get home from primary school, and this is a story I tell all the time, but I get home from primary school and I would get the newspaper, which would be thrown on my doorstep, and I would open it up, go to the sports section, and I'd get a cup of noodles and I'd sit in front of the heater and I would just read the Herald Sun from back to front because I just loved reading. I loved journalism. I loved sport, and it was just kind of this mix of everything. And I did that for as long as I can remember. And yeah, pretty much leaving high school, I knew exactly what I wanted to do was either get into sports journalism or something where I could get paid to watch sport that I love. And yeah, it basically led me to here and was very well set on what I wanted to do. And that sort of changed a little bit over time. Obviously, like I said, I was sports journalism probably at the start was my goal. I thought I was going to be a writer. I thought I was going to be, you know, interviewing people on the regular and writing for newspapers and stuff. And it sort of changed as, you know, times changed, as social media became a bigger sort of part of everybody's life. And yeah, I sort of found a, you know, really love for it. And yeah, now here we are basically.
You are one of only two people, now four technically, that I can talk about this with, but you were one of the first two to have a study abroad program and go to UNLV for a semester. Yes. That was thanks to Holmes Glen. Can you tell me about that experience?
Yeah, well, you know, sort of similar to that, you know, that story. I really always wanted to study abroad, and it never really became an opportunity for me just based on money and all these sorts of things. So I ended up obviously studying here, and I think, yeah, we were sitting in class in a class in the second year, and Sam walked in and said, this is an opportunity that we have come across. And I think you say the story more than anything, but like my face lit up beyond anything that I've experienced before. And it was like, I was like, I'm made to do this. And yeah, went through the process. Obviously me and Cal, who, yeah, we were the first two to go over there, which was just an incredible experience. Like I still say it now, I have never, ever, ever, I will never take that for granted. It was so much fun being able to experience sport on another side of the world at such a massive level. Like, you know, they say it, but America is so good at everything they do when it comes to sport and sports media. It is such a big part of their culture over there. And being able to witness that firsthand was awesome. And, you know, it wouldn't have been able to happen without Holmes Glen. I'm glad they continued it on. I'm glad me and Cal didn't mess anything up and they can do it through now and everything, which is really cool. But yeah, I had a blast. It was so much fun. And being able to come back and, you know, me and Cal have been able to, you know, hold meetings and hold different sort of presentations and stuff and encourage students to do it now. It's something that I would encourage over and over and over again. And it's one of the big reasons why I think this degree is, you know, second to none.
We had Liam McCullough on a few weeks ago, and Liam and I went to Vegas for a very small trip. It was only 2 weeks, not a whole semester, and we noticed such a difference between the industry in the US and here. What is something that blew your mind when you got there?
Something that I find sort of so crazy, and it's still kind of like I still just get so shocked by it. We had an American come into work and then work for us for a little while, but he asked us, like, you know, do you guys have like beat writers here? And for those that aren't aware, beat writers in America, basically every sports team has dedicated writers that write exactly about that team. Like, they will have 1 to 3 to 4 for just a specific team. And like, some cities will have 7 teams across all the different sports. Like, New York have 2 basketball teams and 2, you know, football teams. So they have dedicated beat writers for everything. Like, there is just thousands of journalists over there, and it's crazy how much exposure it gets, how much papers and local, you know, publications are dedicated to these sorts of sports. And, you know, all the different channels, they all have local channels and everything. I got to watch some really funny ads and stuff for different lawyers and things like that in Nevada, which is just, it's ridiculous. Like, they their whole lives revolve around it, basically. And like I said, these journalists are, you know, paid what we are over here to just cover one team, basically. It's every day reporting on the same team, even in the off season. And I think that's something that, you know, is really cool here. And we don't have beat writers here necessarily. We have writers that, you know, might focus on specific areas of a sports, you know, league or whatever, but it's not about specific teams. And it's crazy to witness over there.
We are shocked at how Americans go about their life in the sports media, but they cannot even begin to fathom how we do it down here. Like,
not even close.
I remember when they found out that our major networks make TV rundowns on Excel, they nearly died.
Yeah.
They were like, there is no way this isn't an automated process. Nah. They are just so far.
Unbelievable.
Advanced.
They have no idea. And like I said, yeah, we had this American, James, who worked with us for a little while, and he just was shocked by just like the way we go about things here. And we're pretty, like, it doesn't seem like it when you're in the industry, but like, we're pretty relaxed. Like, there's a lot of very relaxed things going on. And said on game days, like, obviously, you know, we have rigid schedules that you got to stick to, but it's, compared to what it is over there, it is so chill it out.
You were also there for the Super Bowl. Yes. That would have been insane. Talk to us about that.
That was nuts. That was really, really cool. I was working for ESPN Australia at the time as well, so I got to do some really amazing things. They have Radio Row for the whole week before, where Monday through Friday they have just one big convention center full of all radio stations, TV stations, local channels for every state in the country. It is nuts. There is more people there than you will ever be able to experience in your life. There's people there that you would never thought you'd be in the same room as. It is bizarre. And like I said, it's just everything we do, but to the max. Like, you know, you look at like Fed Square Grand Final week, and they'll have, you know, maybe one Fox Footy big box thing set up. There's like 9 of them all just around the same area. And you're just like, where are all these people coming from? How are you all affording to get out of here?
That's my question. How do you afford to go to the Super Bowl? How do you afford to park your car there? I don't understand.
It's nuts. Man, the Ubers were so expensive there. But it was really cool. And like, I didn't get to go to the game, unfortunately. It would have been amazing. But just the atmosphere of it all, the vibe of it all. And then where we were studying, you could see Allegiant Stadium from where we were. And that night, it was funny. Me and Cal would sit there and we watched just private jet after private jet after private jet flying out all night. It was literally from the moment the game ended all the way through, there was just jets flying all night. And it was such a bizarre experience. And we don't get that as much here. Like, obviously, the grand final is our big sort of moment, but it's nothing like it is there. It is unbelievable.
It is actually sport on steroids. We will never have it like that in Melbourne. But what's your thoughts on the entertainment factor in sport in America? Because I'm pretty strong on I never want to lose the fact that people go to the AFL Grand Final to watch the game and not for the entertainment. And I found that to be completely different in Vegas. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, you said obviously before, there's differences in America and Australia and the way we go about sports. And I think a thing that I really love about Australia is we're very traditional. We are a very traditional just people. Like, every league that we have, every sport that we have, we like to keep things very the same. You see it in cricket all the time. Like, they put numbers on the back of the jumpers in cricket and people lost their minds. Like, it's literally,
we can't even
like
move
that.
A grand final to the
can't
night.
Can't move a grand final. So, like, that's what I think is I kind of like it. Like, as much as I would also like to see, you know, some things different, obviously, we're never going to get the caliber of talent that, like, you know, the Super Bowl get when it comes to the people that
not
come on and everything
Snoop
like
Dogg?
That. Well, he's, again,
Super Bowl a long time ago.
Yeah, Super Bowl a long time ago. But like, you know, it's one of those things where I kind of like the tradition of it. And and just in my mind, and it's probably the footy brain in me, but there is nothing better than a packed MCG, 100,000 people there on a beautiful spring day, just sun shining. And, you know, when you're at home, you watch it on TV and it feels right. And I just, I don't know, I like that. And I like the fact that it's at the same place. You know, it feels like it's home. It feels real. And it makes everything feel very, like, higher spectacle. Whereas in, like, in the NFL and everything like that, they obviously change it every year. And, like, it still feels like a big spectacle with all the entertainment they got going around. But, you know, the AFL doesn't have to pay as much when you can just build it around this day, around this stadium. And, it, you know, it adds so much value.
As you touched on at the top, you've had lots of roles, very exciting roles. So I'm sure you weren't too nervous after graduating, but can you take me back to that feeling when you graduated, no more uni, and you're thinking, what's next?
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. Like you said, I did a lot of roles sort of while I was working, obviously none full-time up until the St Kilda one. But being able to sort of tick that box was something that I was really happy with. It was kind of like a bittersweet thing. It's kind of like, that's 3 years of my life that I was doing all these things. And while all these roles were sort of changing and chopping in between, like, there was one constant, and it was coming here. It was coming to homeschooling. So it was one of those things where it was sort of up in the air. But I was really happy to be done. I was really happy to have been able to just succeed. Like, I had different things happen towards my second and first year here where I was, like, you know, up against it a little bit and going through different things. But to get to the end of it, to be able to just know that I had done what I wanted to do, was really special. And I'm just very happy that I was able to do it. And, you know, we spoke about this a little bit before, but, like, the group that we had when we were doing it was really special. Like, you know, just a good group of people that were there the whole way through. And I think being able to do it as a collective was definitely the most special part.
We were very lucky. You don't always get to have a year level that
you do not.
Everyone gets along really well. And of course we had our banter, and there was obviously everyone was different in the group, but we got along well. So it was definitely a special few years. So you touched on at the start, you were digital and content producer at Triple M and Melbourne Victory. You were also social media producer at ESPN before getting your role at St Kilda. Can you talk to me about those roles and what you learned?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a pretty funny thing that all the roles that I'd had prior to St Kilda kind of collaborated, and now I do parts of all of them in the job that I have now, which I think is really cool. So Victory was very sort of light touch. It was just game days. I was doing NPL games and stuff like that, a few men's and women's A-League games, but mainly sort of NPL match reports and live tweeting and stuff like that, which is necessary in those sorts of sports. And that's the thing that I do now, the live tweeting for Saints games. So I kind of took that from there. And then Triple M was very video-based, so it was a lot of, you know, cutting up footage from the boxes and all these kinds of things, making little articles with, you know, embedded links to try and get people to listen more and everything like that. And a lot of the video skills and Premiere Pro skills that I learned through that, I now use at St Kilda. And then ESPN Australia was a lot of, you know, graphics and, again, more live tweeting kinds of things and sorting out video stuff, getting behind a camera, being able to produce a podcast, producing the ESPN Footy Podcast for, you know, a little while there. Being able to do all those things now leads to where I'm at now, where I can operate a camera. I can make some graphics if our graphic designers are getting snowed under. Like, if they're very light touch, very basic. We've got very good graphic designers down at St Kilda. I can do the light, basic ones. But, you know, they all help to get to where I'm at now. And, yeah, like, I was there for varying parts of time. You know, Triple M was there for a season, ESPN was there for a bit over a year, and Victory was probably, yeah, a season total kind of thing. So those different roles that I got helped me to get to, yeah, where I'm at now, where it's a full-time role, but I felt really comfortable going in. And there never really felt like a point to me at St Kilda now where I thought I was getting sort of snowed under, or I thought I was sort of getting that imposter syndrome, because I'd had really good experience and I'd learned a lot here at Holmes Glen and learned these different things that put me into a good spot. And yeah, it was a good few years doing a lot of, pretty much every job I could put my hands on I was doing.
Davin would be very proud. I remember we had an assignment for Davin where we had to live tweet. So he'll be glad that it's coming into...
Yeah, that was a good one.
Coming into your job now. I think everyone would kill me if I didn't ask. You work at St Kilda Football Club and it has probably been the biggest few weeks of football media in your team specifically. Everyone wants a bit of St Kilda lately. Talk to me. Naz re-signs. What's that like?
Yeah, that was nuts. The whole year felt like it led to that point, because the underlying theme of every post that we'd put up, the underlying comments, the amount of comments that we had every time Naz played well, which was very frequently this year, was about signing him. And it became this massive drawn-out thing of every day there was a new news story about Naz. Every day we'd sit there and get really worried. And then obviously it all happened one day. And it was crazy. It was like just one of these things where you can't really, you think you're prepared for it and then it happens and you're not. Like, you just, like, everything just explodes all at once. It's funny, and I'm sure they're not going to mind me saying this, but we were very confident that he was going to sign. Not in like anything that he'd said. We were just like in our hearts, and especially in my heart, I was like, he loves the boys. He'll stay. Like it's just kind of how it is. And for the first time that day that it happened, that morning, we had started to have the thought of what if he doesn't. It was bizarre. It was, the timing on it was strange. We literally walked in the office and said, okay, it's Monday morning. We just had another win, I think. And it was like, what happens if he doesn't stay? All right, well, here's what we got to do. And then kind of put it on ice and said, you know, we'll come back to it and whatever. And then probably 3 hours later, he signed. So nuts.
Insane. So what happens from a media perspective? You've got the biggest possible signing in the AFL for a very long time and probably the biggest moment in St Kilda history.
Close to.
If not in the last decade ever. So you've got this possible scenario. How do you work around a possible scenario? Are you making graphics, getting videos ready in case, or are you sitting on your hands? And when did you find out? Did you know before the media knew?
So, all right, Claire, and if Claire does watch this eventually, she will be very, very happy that I'm saying this kind of thing. The overwhelming...
Claire is, for those that don't know.
Claire is the head of communications, head of media and communications at St Kilda. So every time anybody wants any of our players or coaches or whatever, go through Claire. And she's been doing it for a really long time. She's great at it. She said to us, and she kept saying this pretty much everywhere, and it stuck with me through it all. She said, the only thing worse than Naz not signing is him signing and us not being ready. That was her motto. That was her big thing. She could have written it on a whiteboard because she said it that often, kind of thing. So we were as prepared as we could be. So everything that we needed to do that didn't involve the player himself, we were getting sorted in the weeks prior, sort of thing. So the teaser video that we put out, which was the jumper spinning, we'd had that filmed a couple of weeks before. We had a hype reel, obviously, that went out. That happened, you know, a couple of weeks before as well. All of the marketing that we had, so the $7 memberships, which just went crazy in the end. I think we sold 17,000 of them
as
of today, which is nuts. That was all put into motion, and it changed along the way. So earlier in the year, it was like a deal where it was, if it was still going to be this season, it was $7 for 7 games for earlier in the season. And then as it got later signing, we then had to realize, well, it's not going to be worth it anymore for this year. We have to roll it over into next year. So things just kept developing, but it was something that was always on the top of mind. Like while we were doing everything else, and it was very easy for my job to not forget about it because, you know, I was getting comments every day about signing this guy. And I can't do anything about that. But it was always there. And then, yeah, we had to be prepared. And then, sort of about 12:30, I was, sitting down and saw the tweet from Cal Toomey come through. And I went, okay, that's interesting. And I wasn't sitting in, like, my main office bit. And I get a decent view of sort of things that's going on. And I was like, I haven't seen anything. All right. And I stood up and went back to my desk and sort of we all spoke about it and said, is this real? And then all these very important people came out of their offices and they were like, you should probably start getting some things ready. And then Ross came out and he said this on Agenda Setters. He got a media guy and said, you need to come to the theatre room in the next 2 minutes because we're announcing something. And we just looked at our videographer and he just swooped his camera up and ran down there. And when he was down there sorting that, that's when we were like, all right, let's get it all going. And we didn't want to mess anything up. We didn't want to rush too early and leave all these things out. So I basically found out when everybody in the world found out. But because we were prepared, like Claire said, we were ready to go, which was really cool.
That is great words of advice from Claire. But I think a lot of people will be shocked by that. Will be really, really shocked to find out that the media team at St Kilda found out the exact same time they did if you opened Twitter at the same time.
Yeah, it was literally one of those things where it just happened to be how it was. But in saying that, we were still prepared for it. It's not like we were absolutely caught off guard. Obviously, we were just waiting for the day that it happened. And in a perfect world, we would have known, you know, a little while before. But nature of a deal like this, like you said before, it's one of the biggest deals in AFL history. It's one of the biggest things that happened to St Kilda in a decade. It's one of those things where it was going to get out and we had to be quick. And we were. So
I obviously don't work at St Kilda. And even when it hit Twitter, my entire workplace, it was like erupted. It was weird behaviour.
It blew up.
Genuinely, everyone was just like, oh my God, it's happening. It's happening. And run sheets went out the window, radio went into a frenzy. It really was a special moment, I think, not only for St Kilda, but for just footy in general. It was just a good news story.
100%. And we have never received such positive sort of sentiment afterwards, like not just from Saints fans, but from fans everywhere, just messaging and leaving comments, just being like, I'm not a Saints fan, but this is great for footy kind of thing. And like, I tend to agree, like, obviously I'm a Saints fan, but, you know, I think having a player like that pledge loyalty to a club that hasn't necessarily been successful for so long, and you know, and not only just you know doing it for a monetary thing, but he has got you know incredible friends at the football club. You know, Brad Hill is one of his mentors. You know, we have a really strong Indigenous cohort at St Kilda. It was one of those things that sort of showed that footy is more than just you know just kicking a ball around. It's about being with your mates, and I think it was really special. And it helped the sort of month leading up to that. Naz was playing some of the best football anybody has ever seen, including that Melbourne game, which is obviously iconic. But, you know, it helped that it built this genuine storm. And like you, everything that we had planned for the day went out the window. We just, yeah, it was just like, all right, let's leave all that. That's a tomorrow job. Let's focus on now, which is capitalizing on everything. It's getting the right content out, getting content that resonates with fans, getting things that not just fans, but like people around Australia want to see. Like people want to hear from Naz. So let's interview him. Let's, you know, people want to see the reactions from other fans. Let's put them all together and collate them and show them. So it was really, really special.
So if anyone turns on the TV the night Naz signs or opens social media, there is an interview plastered everywhere. If you missed it, you're living under a rock.
It was on all the news channels for a while there.
It was everywhere of Naz, and you were the person behind the mic interviewing him. It is your boyhood club. You've supported Saints your whole life, and all of a sudden you're interviewing Naz on the biggest day of football. What was that like?
Yeah, like I think I put a thing on LinkedIn. That was a real pinch me moment. And I like to think that I have been okay not getting too starstruck with like when since I've been working there, I've been okay. What always got me was the older players, like I sit sort of close to like Brendan Goddard and Lenny Hayes and all that, and they were my childhood heroes. So that was like that was where I struggled in terms of the keeping it all chill. But I had never been really that starstruck until firstly the Melbourne game, post Melbourne game, and then that moment, because I'm standing there and I'm like, this is going to be everywhere, regardless of what he says. He could give the most boring answers ever, but it's going to go everywhere. And it was, we had a 45-minute window to be able to get as much as we could. And we needed to get this interview sorted. We needed Naz to speak on camera for the fans. That was that key bit of content for us, where we need the members to hear from him personally, not through his agent, not through the journalist, not through the club, through him. And so we had to make sure the questions were right. Me and Claire were going back and forth, running through different questions and everything. And it was very, very special. It was just one of those things where then I look at it and, turned on the TV that night and every news channel had a different snippet from the interview or something like that. And I'm like, that is astonishing. Like, just crazy to witness. And then, crazy to do. And it was my second Naz interview. I interviewed him after the Melbourne game as well. And that was when I was also starstruck, because we're in the rooms and every single person in there wants to talk to Naz. I'm there with my little Saints mic and I'm like, can I please talk to you? So it was nuts, but so cool.
As you mentioned, haven't got too starstruck, but obviously the older players you have, there is, I feel like, two kinds of people in this industry. The people that are like, I absolutely do not want to work for the club that I support because I don't want to cross that line of fan and work and all that jazz. And then there's the person that's like, my dream is to work at the club I support. What was your thoughts before you worked at St Kilda, and what are your thoughts now?
My thoughts growing up, I had always wanted to work in a club. That was my end goal, even when I was doing a lot of things, was I really wanted to work for a sporting club. I didn't care which it was. That wasn't what I was sort of sold on. I just loved the idea of being in an organization, in a club, where you can sort of tell a narrative, you can tell this story based on one specific point, and it's reaching the success kind of thing. It just very much happened that it was St Kilda. And there was obviously parts at the start of the time where I was like, maybe this is going to be tough for me kind of thing. But in saying that as well, I feel like a really strong connection to what I do, to like the work that I put out, and every bit of content I look at it, I'm able to look at it as a content creator. I'm also able to look at it as a fan. And I ride every wave very, very much. So the highest of highs, the Melbourne game, Naz signing, I feel really, really happy. I have great times. There are downfalls. The lowest of lows are very, very low. There are low points in the year where I'm like, man, this sucks. Like, I'm having a tough time. Like, we go to West Coast and we lose to West Coast, and then I fly home that night and I get back home at 2:30 in the morning. We've just been the only team to lose to West Coast for the year. I've had to fly 4.5 hours home. I have no sleep and I'm exhausted and I'm just sort of sitting there. And those are tough, absolutely. But the highs make it very, very worth it. And just being able to like tell a story for a club that I have loved for so long, and like, it pinched me stuff. And it's not just for me, it's for like my family. Like, my mum is a diehard Saints fan. A lot of my, you know, my sister is, all my nieces are Saints fans. And after wins, I've been able to get some of the boys to go and take footies over to them, which I think is really special, because it's like, I'm very hands-on in the work that I do, where we win a game and I'm the first one out there with the phone. And it's very special to be able to impact other people in that way and impact my family in that way. And, you know, growing up, we weren't ever on the side that got the footies. And I was like, well, I'm dedicated to getting them the footies. So it's both ways. And like I said at the start, I would have worked for any club that had taken me. But it very much happened that it was Saints. And I couldn't have asked for a better time.
Not every day the biggest signing in AFL happens. So obviously there's no typical day in this world, but can you try and talk me through what your week looks like?
Yeah, so it's very different, especially working in the footy industry, any sports industry really, because obviously it's weekend based in terms of the action that everyone is waiting to see is on the weekend. So we obviously have to be there. We obviously have our office based in Moorabbin, RSA Park, and we, on a usual week, if we didn't have a game for some reason, it'd obviously be the Monday through Friday, usually a work from home day in there, maybe two, depending on what you're going through. We have a system where, you know, if you work a game day on a Saturday and Pink St Kilda, we work a lot of Sundays. We work a full day Sunday, so we'll take off a day sort of during the week. So Monday and Tuesday are a lot of wrapping up what's happened on the weekend, especially if we win, it's sort of Monday and Tuesday. It's a lot of wrap-up stuff. If we lose, have a bad loss in particular, it's trying that Monday, trying to make sure that we get everything we need to out and, like, fans still need to see recap. They still need to hear from the coach. They still need to see this thing. So earlier in the week, it's about that. And then it's basically from sort of Wednesday onwards building to the next thing. Especially if we have a milestone, that starts even earlier. If we had a couple 200 games this year with Steele and Sinclair, those sort of celebrations begin Monday. And while we're still wrapping up stuff from the weekend before, it's getting into the new sorts of things. And that was kind of like that's the way we sort of tried to do it. And then by the time Thursday, Friday hits, it's really getting fans excited. You know, marketing will come to us and say, you know, we want to try and drive attendance a little bit more for this game. So we'll, you know, start putting out some attendance stuff. And that's kind of the usual week. And then, like you said, every now and then things happen in a week that throw everything out the window. Like the Melbourne game, we basically spoke about that forever because it's like, it's the biggest comeback in AFL history. We need to treat it as such. That re-signing happens. That whole week is just NAS content. Like, it's just like, all right, let's just do NAS for this whole week. So there will always be changes to the norm, I suppose, but the sports industry, there is never a norm. So that's kind of how we do it.
You have to be very flexible, especially yes. When NAS is re-signing. It is a rapidly changing industry, especially in the social media space. Davin and I were actually talking before we started the pod, and he was talking about his lectures and having to completely overhaul them because things just change so quickly. What's the biggest shift you've seen in your time in the industry?
Yeah, well, I mean, when I first sort of started getting into it, the first sort of thing I had was a volunteer writing job at the Inner Sanctum, of now, you know, defunct website, but I was there as a journalist, and that was what I thought was going to be the case. And that's not even that long ago. That's sort of 4 years ago. So getting into that then and what it is now, like, And this is the thing I've noticed, especially at St Kilda, like nobody will pay a club to just write articles. No club will pay anybody to just write articles anymore. You can't just be one.
We're not America.
No, you can't just be a one wood. You can't just have one sort of thing under your belt that you know how to do. You've got to really be versatile. And I think that's a thing that has happened everywhere. Like just across the industry, your easiest way to be able to get into it is being able to be really multifaceted, multi-talented, because your first roles that you're probably getting into, whether it's, you know, working for a local club doing their social media, you're not just doing social media, you're doing graphic design, you know, you're doing video editing, you're kind of doing what, when you then get into a bigger sort of club, or, you know, you get to the AFL kind of level, that then gets split up and it gets easier for you. But when you're in the lower levels, you got to really know everything. So I would say, like, the thing I noticed is when people sort of first started to come in, they had one thing that they really wanted to be good at. Now it's, you've got to be pretty good at a lot of things. And, you know, a lot of people I know are very good and very talented at different things. You know, I've still got journalistic talents that I can use if I need to for a website kind of thing, or I can do some, like I said before, some graphics, not great ones. But like, we've got a graphic designer and our senior graphic designer, he also does photos on the weekend. So he can go out and take photos for us, and that helps with his graphic work because he knows what photos he's taking kind of thing. So it's, you've got to just be so across everything, or as much as you can anyway. And it's obviously not as easy, and there's some things you're going to be better at than others, but that's definitely what I've noticed, is you can't just be good at one thing. You got to be able to at least apply yourself to other different things.
I'm sure this is different club to club, but I'd be interested to know what St Kilda's view is on increasing followers versus getting your brand out there and not necessarily needing to retain the follower, just getting as many eyeballs on it as possible. Because I think there definitely is clubs out there that would still be trying to get their followers up. But I think for the most part, is it just that you want to get as many eyeballs on it as possible?
Yeah, I think especially sporting clubs, they base a lot of their support based on, you know, what their membership sort of looks like. And that's a good way to tell sort of what their membership. No one, when you're trying to figure out if your club is really popular, no one's really going to look at your social media followers kind of thing. It's more your membership numbers, your attendance, that kind of stuff, your TV numbers when you're playing. So we, especially in the men's team, and the men and women's team are different in that, because it's different follower accounts for one. But the men's team, it's about engaging the followers we have currently, because they are there to see our content. So we don't want to just put stuff out that our followers are going to see and be like, I don't care. Like, it's just, I understand that you're trying to reach other people, but we want to see content that we want. And there is obviously a time and place for different things. And it's also app to app are very different. So Facebook and Twitter are very news heavy. That's for the ones that really want to know everything that's going on. Instagram is really creative, but it's club focused creative. So you really want to highlight your players, highlight what your players are doing and building their brand. TikTok is a whole different thing. TikTok is, you have a video idea, do it. Just do it. Because TikTok is very much a get your eyes on the industry kind of thing. Because, like, you look at teams around the world, and the LA Chargers are a big, good example of this. Like, people don't know who the LA Chargers are, but they will go shopping for your pages all the time because they're really good at their content. That's what Hawthorn do really, really well. They just, that's what they grew at early this year. Just, they make TikToks about random stuff because they know on TikTok, it's not about, you know, engaging your current fans. And it's a very different market. It's a lot of younger kids on TikTok, and it's trying to, you know, just get them interested in, and eventually they could turn into fans. Eventually it could grow the game, but it's different app to app. We will definitely try and just engage our followers, already ones that we have on Instagram. And it's sort of more the engagement that we look at. So the likes, the comments, the shares, that's the numbers that we really take a lot of interest in. Even when we just post like reels, like we'll look at the views, but it's more how many likes did this get, or, you know, how many shares has it got? What are the comments? What's the sentiment like, kind of thing? And then AFLW is a little bit different in that we're trying to grow our player brands a lot. So the content that we'll produce on the AFLW Instagram, for example, most of the things we do are highlighting what the players will do. So if we even post a photo of a player, it's having their name on it. Just little things like that that help grow the brand of the player, because we want to be able to make our AFLW players more than just athletes. We want to make them influencers. We want to be able to influence younger women, younger girls to play footy and, you know, idolize these people so that they, you know, growing up like all the boys have done for the last, you know, 50 years, 100 years, want to be able to grow them as players rather than just as a team, as a faceless team kind of thing.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I think that's, I mean, we were speaking a few weeks ago on the podcast where I've had a few social media coordinators and producers on the last few weeks. And I was mentioning how I think a downfall of AFLW is that we haven't been able to build, me speaking as a fan, haven't been able to build that connection with the players, because in the early years there's been so many trades and so many, and they have to, they've got to take more money because there's not enough money AFLW. But I think now we're starting to see a switch where you can start to build a personal connection with these players. And I think it's really 100% helping the game.
100%. Like, and that's not even just our own team. We are acting. And I think this is a really good thing among the AFLW accounts and all the teams, is that everyone is working to achieve one common goal, which is let's grow the game. With the guys, it's grow sort of certain aspects, but it's still trying to stay separate to other people. The girls are trying to grow the game as a whole and trying to get everybody involved, because the nature of it is, if more people know who AFLW players are, more are going to go to games, more are going to watch on TV, they can then have better seasons, they can get paid more, and that's sort of how it works. And everybody's working to achieve that common goal. So even in content that we do, we are trying to build up everybody else. A thing, and I will, like, this is one thing that I will take pride in the Ash Centra bounce that happened, obviously, a couple of weeks ago now. I watched that happen on the Thursday night, and we had the Friday game against someone. Can't remember who at this time. We were playing someone on the Friday night. And I thought to myself, I think it'd be really funny and really cool if we could get the guys trying to do that and draw attention to the fact that this AFLW player is doing things that guys are either struggling with or like having a challenge trying to do. And that was my thought, was like, I was like, we can grow a lot. And so I was tagging Collingwood AFLW in these posts, and everyone's tagging our centre. And then we saw over that weekend, everybody did it. So it's like, that's the perfect example of commonly, everyone's trying to achieve the same goal, and that's growing the players. And I think that's the key portion, and something that the American sports do a lot that I think we should adopt more, is people will follow players rather than teams. And if you, obviously you want to be able to have people follow your teams, but it helps to be able to grow a player in that way. And we've seen that with Matilda Schultz at Port Adelaide. She's grown a whole brand just based on TikTok, basically. We've got players on our team that love it. Serene Watson absolutely loves doing TikTok, and she'll see this at some point and be laughing. But, you know, we have players that want to do that, and let them do that. Let them be fun. Let them have fun. Let them grow their followings, because it helps grow everything else.
Ash was so funny. She was like, I woke up and I was so confused. Why were St Kilda and other clubs tagging me on Instagram? What did I do wrong? And
no, we're... didn't do anything wrong. It was just great. Yeah, it was awesome. So
good. How much inspiration do you take from American sporting teams or international sporting teams? Do you take dribs and drabs, or do you try not to take too much inspo from them?
It sort of depends on what I think is kind of interesting. Like I said, I think they've got it right in they grow their players really, really well, and they build a really good brand. It'll sort of depend on again, what the content is. I like to make things especially for like our Instagram and stuff, that are pretty unique, or try to make them unique. And obviously everyone's going to do everything because nothing's been done for the first time, but you try and make it as unique as you can so that people will eventually sort of even copy you. And it's kind of like a nice thing when you see other people doing what you've done. You're like, oh, that's cool that that's happened. But when you look on TikTok and people doing trends and it's going really well and then things like that, you're like, oh, that's a really cool piece of content. And the good thing about the sports industry is no one's going to call you out for copying somebody else because everyone wants to do it. Like, you'll see a video of trends and, like, you know, the wall cams and stuff like that, and like, we'll outly say, like, Collingwood's ability to get their wall cam after their games and stuff, where they do like the dub cam and they shout out teammates and stuff. That's really cool, and that's something that we want to emulate with wall cams and questions and getting their other teammates involved and everything like that. So it's taking a little bit, but it's also being able to maintain your own sort of look at everything and trying to then create new trends on top of that. And it's, you know, whether that's involving players or something stupid, it's always fun.
It's funny you mentioned Collingwood. We had Ethan on last week.
Yes.
And I asked Ethan, what sort of steps do you have to go through before you post on social? Obviously, Collingwood is a massive club, so I'd assumed that there would be lots of steps before you post. But he seemed to think they have a lot of freedom, which is great. Obviously, the bigger posts, they have to get ticked off. What is it like at St Kilda? Is there many things you have to get ticked off, or are you just trusted?
It's basically the same sort of deal, obviously on a smaller scale. I know Collingwood have a bigger team as a whole than what we do at St Kilda, which is, you know, basis of, you know, just their follower base and everything like that. But basically the same sort of deal. So TikToks and stuff is pretty much, you can, if you do it, and as long as it's not stupid and going to get us in trouble, that's fine. You know, feel free. Why, I have a manager, Sam, and if I'm ever like sort of towing the line a little bit, or either of us are towing the line a little bit, we'll kind of look at it and be like, this looks okay. And a lot of time, Claire, who I mentioned before, is kind of our like voice of reason. We'll be like, hey, Claire, what do you think of this? And she's like, that's fine. Whatever, like, that's okay. So a lot of the time it's really creative, especially with things that are very footy based. And it's not like we're, you know, taking the piss out of anybody else or anything like that. And if it's just very footy based, I can pretty much post whatever and it'll go up and it's fine. Obviously marketing things, you want to get things pointed out. Our partners and our sponsors, they want to be able to make sure their videos are really good. So those sorts of videos and those sorts of content, we have to send back, wait for approval, which is what I think most people think it is a lot of the time. But a lot of the time it's pretty free reign. We can get trusted with a lot of things we do. And then if we get in trouble, it's a bit of a, well, why'd you do that? But we don't. And I don't think I've gotten in trouble for anything yet. I don't think. So that's always helpful.
I tell you what, I know a lot of people that are very happy with the Conrad and Jeremiah content that's coming out of St Kilda at the moment. I can't relate. I have not watched the show, but everyone is loving that.
I haven't watched it. We have a new starter, Liv Harrison, who, if Liv's watching this, Liv will be very, very happy. So Liv is very into it. The last two Wednesdays, she's been off. And she has messaged me the Tuesday before with a rundown of things about this show that I should make a video about. So I've made the last like two, I think, without really knowing what's going on. I made one today about it, which is funny. But that's just one of those things where you don't expect it to be good and it takes off. But yeah, people seem to like that content quite a lot.
I do not know Liv at all, but her TikToks are on my For You page every single day. And I could tell.
She's building a brand.
Lighting it up. I could tell when Liv started and when the Conrad TikTok started. I was like, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, she, like, there is a, you'll be able to go back. There is a span of time where we posted, like, you know, four or five times a week on TikTok. And then Liv started and we posted 9 on one game day. And I was like, here's where our new starter started. Here's her first game. And then from there, it's been, yeah, very, very good. She's very good at that kind of stuff. Things that, like, me and Sam, who are both, you know, just mid-20s guys that don't think about. And then Liv came in and changed the whole dynamic. And it very much helped our content. So it was good.
Sam's a legend too. You've got a good team rocking it out there at St Kilda.
Yes.
You've been very generous sharing your story today. We like to finish on a bit of advice. So I'm sure there is someone listening, maybe barracks for St Kilda, maybe doesn't, but I'm sure they would like to be Jared and like to be sitting in your position with your job. What would you say to them to do right now to help them get there?
I'd say right now, if you haven't started doing things yet, just throw yourself into everything. Even if you think that you aren't going to be good at it, throw yourself in. It does not mean it's going to be the job that you end up in. Doesn't mean you're even going to be there for that long. But the way I got to where I am now, it was, you know, it was throwing myself into everything that was possible. It was finding a degree that I thought looked interesting. And at the start, you know, it's hard because, like, both of us, we both graduated in COVID. And I didn't want to look at a book. I didn't want to look at a laptop for the rest of my life. But
no more Zoom calls.
Yeah, exactly. But I was like, you know what? I'll do it because I think this is what's going to get me in the right spot. And you can think something works and then it doesn't, and that's okay. You're not going to get shunned forever if you think something doesn't work. But throwing yourself into everything possible, you know, I know we're both very much the same in that we just did everything we could and there was a lot of free time over the last few years, but it makes it all worth it in the end. And if you think it's going to be a step in the right direction, nine times out of 10, it will be a step in the right direction. You just put yourself into that spot. And you never know, you might find a new love for something that you do. You know, like I said, I originally started as a journalist. And then when I started working at Triple M, I was like, oh, this social media stuff and this video stuff is a really cool thing. And it changed my whole outlook, my whole view. So throw yourself into everything. Don't hold back. Don't think that you're not good enough to do something, because you will be eventually.
You've heard it here first, guys. Just get started. Just start in any way.
Just do it. Just start.
Shape or form. We end the podcast on one question that every guest has hated so far. So I'll give you a little bit of leniency and say you can give me one sentence if you really need, but one word to describe your journey so far.
Can I say busy?
Yeah, you can.
Busy is a good one. It leans into the work thing. It's, you know, there are times where you maybe wish you went to the pub one extra time. There are times where you think, oh, you know, it would have been nice to have gone out on this summer's day. But you also get experiences that you don't, that nobody else gets. And in my industry, in our industry, in the industry that we're in, you know, that we get to work in and we get the pleasure to work in, that's the number one thing. It's pleasure. People are jealous of what we do. Even if they don't want to be a social media person, you know, you might be jealous of them for going to the pub an extra time, but you then see them the next time, they're like, man, can't believe you got to interview Naz. Can't believe you got to be there for this game. And that's when you kind of have that thing in your head of, I might be busy, but I'm doing some pretty cool stuff. So busy, I would say.
I love it. Thank you so much for your time today, Jared. Where can people find you on socials?
Yeah, well, I don't use it very often myself. I try to log out a little bit, but Jared Thomas on Instagram, which is very nice and easy. And yeah, that's basically it, pretty much. I think that's it. LinkedIn too, Jared Thomas. Yeah.
Everyone loves LinkedIn. Oh, no, yeah. LinkedIn's more good than me.
That's more advice. More advice. Use LinkedIn. Do that. Very good. Kira was one that taught me that in university. Use it and it works. So yeah, happy days.
I think I should get a LinkedIn sponsorship for this podcast because LinkedIn has got the most mentions.
LinkedIn's huge. It's massive.
The whole time. Thank you so much, Jared, and all the best.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to The Grad Perspective, where we dive into the real journeys of Holmesland Bachelor of Sports Media and Business graduates. Make sure you follow us on Instagram at thegradperspective.pod and share the podcast with a friend. We will be back next week, same time, same place, with another fabulous guest.